is pep talk.
It is pep talk.
It is. This is pep talk. Physical is expert panel with
me. It's a garden line, too.
And the garden line. But today, per request by Miss the Mayor, had to play a little barber in memory of Robert Redford. Wow, I feel like an icon has left us.
Amazing. And, of course, two of my favorite movies were, one, The Natural.
Oh, gosh, what a great movie.
What a great baseball picture that was.
Glenn Close, oh, yeah.
And I loved All the President's Men.
Oh, gosh.
The Watergate.
Yeah, that was great.
Washington Post deal. Those were two terrific movies.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
weren't political, nothing like that. They were just good entertainment.
I love the way we were. I remember the first time I saw that movie, and every girl I knew, we all fell in love with Robert Redford. I will never, we just talked about, because you were talking about your dress whites, how you always felt good in your dress whites.
Exactly.
The scene where he comes up the stairs and he's in his dress whites, World War II, got the big aviator glasses on, and he takes the glasses off and he looks up at her and it's like, Peter Patter, my little heart.
I did not look as good in my dress whites as
Robert
Redford.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But we both wore them. So
I don't know about that.
That was good stuff.
A great loss. He did so much for philanthropically and also establishing the Sundance Institute. I mean, he's just
absolutely
an amazing person, and he will be missed for sure.
He will be missed, no question. And that music will live on.
Oh, my gosh, yes. But anyway, good morning. This is the Garden
Line.
We're
going to
pep it up now. Pep
here
talk.
We go.
Here we go.
It's a beautiful day.
It's a gorgeous
day. It's a beautiful week. Still got to watch the tropics. No question about that. But
so far, so good.
So far, so good, and nothing looks, like it's imminent and it's going to bother us. So let's just keep hoping. Maybe we'll cruise through this hurricane season totally clean. Storm. Wouldn't that be amazing?
I saw a thing on Facebook yesterday that said that since we have not had not a storm from August, whatever it was, 31st to September 15th, since 1935.
Right.
Like 89 days. Like this is the longest they've ever gone without a storm.
Exactly. But, once again, we're going to be positive today.
Yes. I'm just hoping it's not all saving up for a big
one. Well, I was going to say, we've had some late September, October storms that have affected us.
But it was this
us.
Time last year, in 2020, Sally was the 15th
That's right.
of September, right?
That's exactly
Is that right?
right.
Yeah. So here we go. We're good.
We're good. We're
good.
Let's just keep hoping. Just keep our eye on it, because if something should, endanger us, there are things we need to do.
That's right.
We've all talked about it. We all know what to do. We've all got our hurricane kits and our propane tanks and all of that ready to roll. So let's just hope it doesn't happen. No question about it. There is some interesting stuff. What we need to talk about weather-wise.
Yes, sir.
Is our good friend Daniel Leonard. Remember Daniel Leonard? He wrote a lot. He's an extension agent in Calhoun County, I think it is. Calhoun County. Daniel J. Leonard, one of the best writers I've ever seen insofar as horticulture and residential landscaping and such is done. He just has great articles, all very timely.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me this one. By the way, before I read it, I called him. Did I tell you I talked to him?
No.
I was just so impressed with his writing. And
you've mentioned him before.
And I wanted to let him know, I hope it was okay with him, if we mentioned his articles on the air to be sure that, sometimes people are sensitive about that.
Did you tell him we wanted to have him on the show? Didn't you tell me that you asked
Absolutely.
him?
I said, just cruise over here for Pensacola one morning, do our show. Meg and I'll buy you lunch.
Okay.
You didn't know I told him that, but
it's
I did.
Okay, I'll chip in.
Oh, you don't have to chip in. I got it. But anyway, he, very nice guy, young man. But so he writes these articles about timely events going on in Northwest Florida. And the one he just sent me is Lawn Care When It Just Won't Rain.
Oh, that's a good one.
And here we are. We are dry and we do need some rain. And a lot of folks, I've heard them say over the years, because we do get into this September/October dry period.
Yeah, usually we have a lot more rain right now.
We do, but we don't now. But historically, we do hit these dry spells, and some of the conversation is, well, you're probably not going to get any of these fronts coming in for a while, so probably the only thing that's going to give us rain would be some type of tropical event.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll do without that. Thank you very much.
Really?
Exactly. But so let's hope that doesn't happen. But it is dry, and it could stay dry for a while. So Daniel wrote this article that says, lawn care when it just won't rain. And he goes on to say that centipede grass and zoysia grass and Bermuda grass are very, in the whole scheme of things, very drought tolerant. But when we go this long with no rain, we've got to take some action. So he says, if even with tough grass species, like I just mentioned, difference between a yard coming out of a drought in decent shape versus dead. Oh, I told you I love the way this guy writes. Versus dead is as simple as remembering the answers to the following four maintenance questions.
Do I need to get my notebook out?
Probably not. I'll give you a copy of this.
Okay.
So he has four maintenance questions
okay.
that have to be answered in response to this dry period. Number one, how much should I water to keep my grass alive? Well, we've talked here on the Garden Line of very simple rules I think we need to follow. But here's some of the ones he says. And it takes a little work mm-hmm. from the homeowner to do this. Lawn grass needs 3/4 to 1 inch of water per week to remain looking its best. But he says if you don't have an irrigation system and you've got a huge yard, you might just want to focus your attention on the grass that you can realistically water and let the rest of the outlying areas fend for themselves.
Okay.
I don't know if
that seems kind of cruel.
I was just going to say, Daniel, I'm not sure I totally agree with that. But he said, we've always said this. If you want to know how much an inch of water is on your yard, I don't know that.
Right.
So what you have to do, you get some cat food cans or tuna cans and mm-hmm. set them out there and run your sprinkler system or your regular sprinklers. And when it hits an inch in one of those cans, that is obviously an inch of water going on your lawn.
Okay.
And you have to time that.
Mm-hmm.
Say it took 45 minutes to get that inch. Well, now you know that if you water your yard for 45 minutes with the system you have,
mm-hmm.
be it a sprinkler system, irrigation system or just a regular sprinkler, you know what an inch is. And that is what Daniel says your yard needs in 1 week
okay.
to stave off the drought. Now, let's be honest, Meg.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be honest. Are you going to go get your cat food can out in your yard and do some measuring to see how much an inch is?
Honestly?
Honestly?
No.
I didn't think so. But really, a lot of people, that's a good way to
that's
do
a
it.
Good that's very smart.
Oh, Daniel's absolutely right. That is a great way to do it. But many of us maybe not have the time to do it. So let's go back to the old Garden Line formula of how much to water your grass. Let's take a break.
Okay, we will do
that. Let's take a quick break. Then when we come back, we'll have the answer to the alternative way to Daniel's cat food cans.
All right, okay. I'm all ears right here.
I know you are.
Right here on Pep Talk.
You're on pins and needles.
You got it. And if you are and you've got a question for Mike, this is The Garden Line, 850-437-1620. We'll be right back with Mike's Garden Lawn Secrets.
No, it's no secrets.
Good morning. This is The Garden Line on Pep Talk with Mike Wiggins, the mayor. And he's here to talk about everything you need to know about keeping your garden alive and well. And it is a dry season, so you're giving us our tips on watering the lawn and keeping your lawn fresh and green.
Exactly. These tips come from Daniel Leonard over in Calhoun County. And the first one was, how much should I water to keep my grass alive? And we talked about putting out the cat food or tuna cans, measuring 1 inch of rain. Well, if you don't have time for that, I think you need to make alternative strategies. We always say, if you're in just a regular week or so of dry weather, that you at least need to water every 3 days for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we've said on the Garden Line for years and years.
That sounds right.
And that tends to work. Now, if you really hit one of these prolonged droughts, I say you bump it up one of two ways. One, extend the time. Water 3 times a week, but maybe bump it to 45 minutes.
Hmm.
Let's just put a little more water on each time we do it. And that's a good way to do it. Or set your system, whatever system you may have, to 4 days a week. Then, if we continue this for a matter of weeks, then let's bump it to five times a week.
Okay.
Now, the experts are going to say, Wiggins, you are so wrong. That is too much water. See, I don't believe that.
Not when you're getting up into the high 80s and 90s.
Well,
solid sunshine all day long here.
That's right. But keep in mind that here in Pensacola, we have, we don't have soil. We have sand. And it just will just go right through so fast. So you just have to watch out, watch the weather, see if we get rain. If not, just do that. Answer Daniel's lawn care question, his first maintenance question.
Okay, so we've got 2, 3, and 4, right?
We have 2, 3, and 4. Okay, should I mow during a drought?
Oh.
Okay, well, he says and he acknowledges that an unmowed yard is not mowed, looks unkept, and none of us want that. But mowing is a stress on grass. So here's what you do. One, probably the most important thing he says is raise that mower a little bit more. We've always said mow high, 2 inches for zoysia and 3 inches for centipede, 4 inches for St. Augustine. Well, you may want to raise it just a little bit more because that puts less stress on the grass. So that's number two.
Mm-hmm.
Should I mow? Okay, number three, should I fertilize? And this is where I'm going to disagree just a little bit. We've talked extensively on the Garden Line over the past, really, month that late August and September is the time to put winterizer fertilizer on your grass. Daniel is saying just don't do it, period. He says, one, you need water to get it down into the grass, and you don't have any rain at all. And if you put it on there and it's so hot and so dry, some of the nitrogen that you put on there will volatilize.
Kind of burn
kind of
it?
Return to the atmosphere. Could burn it. But we're not really looking with the fertilizer we're going to use this time of year for the nitrogen. It should be a very low nitrogen and a high potash. Remember that third number in the fertilizer should be higher than the first two. So I think you can do it, but that's when you need to bump up the watering, say, just for a week or so to that, say, 4 times a week or even 5 times a week to get that fertilizer working, to get that potash in there and help strengthen those roots. You may not want to do it. You may want to listen to Daniel and say, I'm just not going to do it until we get back into a cycle of rain. But I really think that winterizer needs to get on that grass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to go against.
I'm going with you.
The experts.
I'm going with you.
I'm going against the experts.
So you're my expert.
Take that. Oh, no. Take that for what it's worth. All right. Number four, the last one. What do I do about weeds?
Mm.
What do you think? Give me a one word. What would you do about weeds in a drought?
Call Mike.
That's two words. That's two words. I think the first word is probably nothing. Nothing. Because what you're going to use right now would be a post-emergence. And, of course, at 90 degrees, you don't want to use it anyway. Forget whether it's a drought or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it has these 2,4-D formulations like Trimec and that type of thing, which are wonderful for post-emergence weed killing against things like Virginia, dollar weed, Florida pusley, things like that. I think we ought to kind of cool it on that until we do get into a cycle of rain because it's too hot, it's too dry. Let's just wait. Let's aim ourselves to the pre-emergence.
I have a question about that, as a matter of fact.
In November.
Okay. So guess what? This is the question that just came in from Willie. When should pre-emergent be applied to centipede, and is there a big box store product you could recommend?
Yes. Atrazine is the product I would recommend. That's the ingredient. Mm-hmm. And you'll sometimes have to read the fine print on the spray that you're buying, the pre-emergence. atrazine is good. And it'll take care of a few broadleaf weeds too. But what we want to do is, it's too early for that. Atrazine would burn your grass if it's 93 degrees. You just don't do it. So we shoot for November. Let's shoot for the 15th of November. It should be cool enough then to put the atrazine on, which will, one, take care of a few of the annual broadleaf weeds, which will probably die anyway because of the cold, but it will inhibit many of the winter weeds, that are annual winter weeds, that are going to come up. And then, as we've always said, we repeat that exact same thing in February, middle of February, for your spring and summer weeds. It's atrazine. There are other ones out there too, but atrazine is a good product. But as we've always said, they're just not perfect. Mm. You know, depending on your situation, the amount of weeds you have, the amount of grass that you have there, you know, many times it'll get a lot of them, but sometimes it won't get them all. The best deterrent, of course, to weeds, and it's kind of a trite saying, but it's true, is a lush lawn.
So
we do everything we can. We water, we fertilize, we take care of insects, we take care of disease, we mow it right. We do all of those things to make that lawn really lush. And sometimes that'll take care of the weeds.
Okay, thank you so much. Willie says thank you. He just sent in a text. So we appreciate that.
Thanks for calling, Willie. We appreciate it.
If you've got a question for Mike, 850-437-1620. This is Pep Talk in the Garden Line. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Garden Line. I'm Pep Talk with Mike Wiggins, 850-437-1620. Lots of questions rolling in, Mike. But we did have a fun comment from Janet. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so this is, we are, sadly, if you haven't heard the news, mourning the loss of Robert Redford,
yes.
who passed away.
Yes.
And so she says, concerning Robert Redford news with plants, he was known to be an environmentalist. I found online that his favorite drought-tolerant plants for his properties were lavender, jasmine, and succulents. How about that?
Great choices.
Lavender, jasmine, succulents, as he's writing these down. Interesting,
right? We can do all of those here.
Yeah.
We can do all of those.
Yeah.
Lavender, of course, is kind of a drought tolerant. I would kind of put it in the herb category.
Mm-hmm.
Succulents are great plants. Succulents are plants that have water in the leaves.
In them, right.
Yeah. One of my favorite house plants, which is a succulent, is a jade plant.
I have a jade plant.
Oh, do you have
one? Yes,
aren't
I love
great?
Them.
Well, that's a great succulent.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They just last.
It just lasts.
Well, right. For someone like me who's not a very good gardener, they kind of right. take care of themselves.
Exactly. And, of course, the jasmine. We have all kind of jasmine here in Pensacola. Really, I guess, three very good kinds. Confederate jasmine,
mm-hmm.
which is a good, goes on a trellis, beautiful flowers. And
what are the colors?
White.
Oh,
white.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. With that, and then we have Asiatic jasmine, mm-hmm. which is a smaller leaf, which is a ground cover, which is used all over Pensacola. It's really, it just grows. It's very prolific. Matter of fact, sometimes it'll try to take over. You have to kind of trim around it. And Carolina jasmine, which is a pretty one. It's a yellow. That's
interesting.
Yellow.
Interesting. It's not Carolina blue?
No, it's not Carolina blue, now that you mention it. But in any event, those three jasmines are good. All three are good here, and I'm glad that Robert Redford liked those.
Yeah, thanks, Janet, for looking that up. That's interesting.
Janet, thank you very much. That's great.
We appreciate that. Mike, we've got a ton of questions. We're going to have to probably save them for the next half hour because we are coming up on the news here shortly in just a few minutes, seconds.
Where did the time go?
I don't know. It just flies by.
Exactly. So I'm ready whenever we get back.
All right. So if you have a question for Mike, this is The Garden Line, 850-437-1620. And remember, you can always re-listen to this broadcast on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock right here on News Radio 92.3. And you can go to the podcast page, go to The Garden Line, go to Pep Talk, The Garden Line, and you will see every podcast he's ever done on that page. So you can find out anything about gardening. So stick around.
Okay.
If you got a text, 850-437-1620. We'll be back after the news on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Welcome back to Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg, and it is The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. Mike, we've already got somebody on the phone with us this morning. John's got a lawn question for you.
John's been listening to us a long time.
I know, bless his heart,
and
so thank you for waiting.
Thank you, John. What's up?
What's your question?
Good morning.
Morning.
So I live in Avalon Shores. I'm off of the bayou, so we're waterfront. Very small lot, and its predominant grass is zoysia. I guess the main plot is probably 30 by 50. And for 3 years, I've been fighting every single weed that you can think of. I could go on and on and on, from weed and feed to hand pulling, and I'm at a loss. So what I think I'm going to do is just kill everything and resod, because I can't win this battle. It doesn't matter what. And I've had people who are professionals at golf courses look at my lawn and direct a maintenance plan, and nothing seems to change the outcome. It just overtakes me. So is there, I hate to use a strong herbicide, but I don't know that I have a choice if the lawn, or I just cultivate the weeds and keep them cut and it looks green.
That's the easy way. That's the easy way.
Well,
I hear you. 30 by 50 is doable as far as resodding is concerned. I mean, if you had 2 acres, it'd be a different strategy. Have you tried?
Right.
Let's kind of real quickly kind of go through. Have you tried some of the good post-emergence like Trimec and then the atrazine, for example, as a pre-emergence? It sounds like you have and have had no luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
How about shade? Is it shady where you're?
It's mostly sun. I have some shade underneath one or two palms, and it doesn't seem to, it doesn't matter. There's just one specific side that it just creeps in from the woods and my neighbors, and I just can't keep up with it. Now, normally I would probably continue to do different treatments, but it is not a perfectly level. So there's a lot of divots, like, and little waves because of settling. So I'm going to at least have to put in sand to fill and break it all up anyway. So while I'm doing that, I might as well just kill it all.
Kill it all and start again. Exactly. And, of course, there's a couple of ways to start all of that. One is to use a non-selective herbicide like Roundup. Spray it.
Right.
Kill it all. Let whatever it's going to come back, let it come back. Spray it again. And then when everything is dead, obviously, till it, turn it, rake it, put it level, put some lime down, and then go ahead and put your sod in.
That was my plan.
that's exactly what I would do. Now, insofar as the shady area, and it doesn't sound like it's too much, but keep in mind, with that 30 by 50 area, you can landscape your way out of that. I mean, a nice circular, irregular bed around the palms such as that, you could even cut your area, let's say, by a third, so you just didn't have to sod that much, and then use...
That's exactly the plan.
Well, that's exactly what I would do. One, it cuts down on your mowing, and it cuts down on your cost of sodding. And so do as much of the landscaping as you can, and then...
Right.
I would almost, since you've had that trouble, I would usually say, okay, go ahead and do it. Do it now. It's fine to do it now. But in the drought, you know, it's dry here, but it's also dry out in the sod fields too. I think I would wait till spring. I would. But the problem with waiting till spring is if you're going to use that non-selective herbicide, it doesn't like spring weather. It wants hot summer weather to really work. So you may even pass up on that particular angle of it and just till what you've got and rake it out and go ahead and do your sodding in the early spring, say April.
That sounds perfect for my budget. That's what I would do.
You know? I think spraying that stuff in the cool weather of the spring, you're not going to get the results you want. So I would maybe pass on that, just as I say, remove what you've got. Even get you a sod cutter is not a bad way to do it either. And then while you're at it, take that sand and get everything nice and level, and then do your sodding. That's the avenue I would take. And, you know, I always say this is kind of silly, but get your garden hose out and stretch it to make your natural beds, to kind of design that, if you will. And that way you can say, you know, that's my natural area now. This is lawn, and let's move on.
And it's funny because I widened, because there's several stages to the landscape. Like I said, it's a very small yard. But I widened the driveway, and the encroaching grass was great zoysia. And I pulled it up a sod, and I nurtured it and grew it, got it really green, and I replaced it and dug up the areas where the weeds were, killed it, and placed the sod. And the sod won't take. The weeds just take over.
I think it's time to start over. Time to start over.
I need a white flag.
Okay. All right, John. Thank you so much,
John. John. Thanks for calling us and thanks for joining the Garden Line.
And once you redo it, let us call us back and let us
know. Oh yeah, let us know the different stages. Let us know how you're doing.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, John.
We got another question for you, Mike, that came in on the text line. And if you've got a question for Mike on the Garden Line, 850-437-1620, send in a picture with this. And it looks like a big green tree with big bright plum purple berries. And it says, "Can you tell me?" It was hard to tell in the picture. Can you tell me what kind of tree it is?
What we did, we sent that question over to our research department. And they said, and sometimes they don't have enough coffee, and so they really kind of make up things. Anyway, Mexican plum, which is kind of, it's almost kind of a weed.
It's beautiful. There's like a, but they're bright, bright purple berries. Now, are they edible? Is the question.
Are they edible? I don't know.
I would.
So I would say no.
I would not try them.
It's also called a big tree plum or a fall plum. I just don't.
It kind of looks weedy, though.
It does.
In a way.
It does.
In the picture.
Exactly.
So I would suggest not eating them, but maybe look up Mexican
it's in the
plum.
It's in the same order as roses, figs, elms. Well, it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
So anyway, that's the best we got on that one. Now, here's what I always recommend, since here on the Garden Line, we love our pictures, but sometimes we don't get it right. County agent.
Right.
Take it out to the county agent. And they would say, you know, take a piece of it out there, you know, that has the little plums on there and the foliage also, just a limb, if you will. And they can figure that out. They've got all the resources from the state, and they can figure it out for you.
Okay.
I wish we could.
I know.
We
try. But we have a limited research department, but we do the best we can.
Yeah, they do the best they can. We like them, but they just don't work.
All right, we've got several questions for you, Mike, when we come back. So we're going to take a quick break. 850-437-1620. This is The Garden Line on Pep Talk. And we're back with The Garden Line on Pep Talk. We know what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to do a lightning round because we have so many texts coming in. We are flooded with questions this morning, Mike.
Well, and we appreciate it more than you'll ever know. Thank you.
Okay, so right out of the box here, we had a question because you were talking about the extension office. So a friend that was a listener to the show had sent these pictures to us. Remember with the bug, the white mites on the leaves?
We did, and I think our initial diagnosis was it was whitefly.
Well,
but they have found that it was
something a little
different.
The person says, since then, I took them to the Santa Rosa Extension office. Josh identified the citrus as leaf miners and the white powdery bugs as mealybugs. Treating mealybugs with insecticidal soap and a species of wasp should take care of the leaf miners.
Well, the leaf miners are... that's a very interesting insect. It gets kind of between the layers in the leaf. You see the little path on the leaf,
right?
And so, but you have to be careful. If it was on an ornamental plant, you could use some type of systemic insecticide that would work through the plant. But citrus, you can't do that, obviously, because it's an edible plant. So it's not that big a deal. Many times, it's more cosmetic than it is a problem.
And destructive.
Destructive. Very good.
I know those big words occasionally.
you know about these leaf miners. So I would I'm not worried too much about them. The insecticidal soap on the citrus is perfect. It's organic. It's not toxic, and it would be very safe.
Okay.
So I think that's a great solution. Mealybugs are everywhere. And I'm glad we got that straightened out.
Well, we love it when you follow up like that. So thank you so much for letting us know what you
found out.
And
thank you again.
That Santa Rosa County Extension Office is great.
They are great.
They do a good job. Okay, another question for you, Mike. When should shrubs be fertilized this fall, like azaleas, gardenia, et cetera?
Well, That's another great question. And we have to react to the weather, to the drought. But this fall, let's say we get into a cycle of rain in a week or so. Let's take azaleas. That's a good one since we're in a lightning round here. Azaleas, yes, I would fertilize them. And, of course, you can go buy fertilizers that is really just for azaleas, camellias, and gardenias. That's been on the market a long time. If you're going to fertilize those plants in the fall, it's a good idea, half strength. Remember, we always like to do a tight handful for every foot of height in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
In the fall, we cut that in half.
Oh,
a tight handful for every 2 feet of height.
Okay.
I think that math is right. So that's the best way to do that. But get your azalea, camellia fertilizer and do it. Now, if we continue with this drought, if you will, you might want to hold off just a little bit. And what you certainly don't want to do is to over-fertilize and promote a whole lot of new growth, which could be damaged by cold weather.
Mm, okay.
So, and if it gets into late October and we still haven't had any rain, we may have to wait till next year, till spring, to fertilize it.
Okay, great questions so coming
in. We've got to react to this dry weather. We really do.
Well, thank you for that question. We've got great questions coming in. Got another one for you. We have several types of what people call sand spurs or burrs in our grass and surrounding neighborhoods' yards. Surrounding neighbors' yards. What is the best way to get rid of these?
Well, I've had some of my smart aleck friends who've had this problem, and we've had talked about this question. They just said move. But you don't.
Oh, that's not right.
We're not going to do that. They're smart alecks anyway. No.
Shocker.
Oh, yes, a shocker. All right. Listen, the pre-emergence is the best way to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's not perfect. It is hard to do. If you can dig them out, that's good. But the pre-emergence in November and in February, using a pre-emergence which contains atrazine. We talked about that a few minutes ago.
Right, atrazine.
Atrazine is a good one for that. But it's very hard to kill. Sometimes you get to a point where you have to use a Roundup type material that kills everything. Keeping in mind, if these are intermingled in your lawn, it would kill the lawn too. So that's maybe off the table. So I would use my pre-emergence, dig them when you can, and go about that way. It's very difficult, especially if they, you know, take a toehold in your yard.
Mm-hmm. And, they kind of overrun things.
And overrun things, then. But they're so uncomfortable. You can't go barefoot.
They're the worst.
You can't go barefoot in the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
It really is bad. So I wish I had an easy solution. I don't. But the pre-emergence in November and February, I think, is your best route.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for sending that question in. Got another one for you, Mike. What's the best way to get rid of surge, the green stuff that takes over parts of the grass that leaves a bare spot when you try pulling it up if it suffocated the grass already?
Right, and that's another tough one. That's another.
And there's a picture of it.
Yeah, that's another.
Overgrowth.
You can use some post-emergence. Remember, we like post-emergence when we kind of get into October, and that's like Trimec, which is a 2,4-D mixture. Mix it up and spray it. If you can get that before the seeds appear and even pull it before that, then they won't reproduce quite as much in your yard. But if you can use the post-emergence, and then, once again, I sound like a broken record this morning, use your pre-emergence November and February. But it's a hard one. But if you let them mature, they can be more of a problem, whereas if you could get them early in their growth, that's the best way to handle that.
Okay. Another question just came in, sort of related to this, from Ann. She says, I applied 40 pounds of lime per 1,000 square feet, as you recommended last week. How long must I wait to apply Bug Blaster granules? I've been applying Bug Blaster purchased from Larry every 4 weeks. We have St. Augustine grass.
I don't think the lime and the Bug Blaster, there's no problem with those mixing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you have the lime already down, I think you can go ahead and use the Bug Blaster. That's a good brand, by the way. If you have sod webworms, chinch bugs, other insects in your lawn, that is a good product to use. It's granular. I think you can get a liquid also, but you can get it granular. So you just put it out like a bag of fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've limed the yard, I don't think you have a problem because you would water both of them in.
Right.
So I don't think you have a problem with using the bug blaster right after the Lyme.
Okay. Another question has rolled in. It's been busy this morning.
Oh, it has been. We appreciate it.
Yes, we so appreciate you texting in. 850-437-1620. So is it too late to sod my backyard with St. Augustine?
Great question. That is probably maybe the question of the day. Under normal circumstances, a regular cycle of rain and that type of thing, sodding this time of year is fine. Not a problem. Because it's not dormant yet. You're going to get some good growth out of it. And you would get growth out of it anyway because the roots are going to grow. But with the drought, I'm not so sure I would go ahead and do it because I do worry about not getting quality sod. The people who sell sod in Pensacola are not going to sell you a bad sod. Mm-hmm. But you need to check it. Be sure it's got a good base to it. And if we haven't had rain for a month or so, then I'm not sure it'd be the best thing to do. Because as soon as you put it down, I always recommend if you sod for a week or so, water every day. Every day. Because you've got to get that water on there and get that grass to adjust to the soil that you've got. So I don't really like to sod when the grass is dormant, let's say in December and January. So watch the weather. And if it stays like it is now, I hate to tell you to do this, but you might need to or want to wait till spring. You just don't want to spend that money and that time and have things just not work out for you.
Okay, great advice. As always, great questions coming in. We're going to take a quick break here. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk with Meg, with Mike Wiggins, the mayor and landscaper extraordinaire. You like that rhyme there, sir? That was rapping. That's my version of rapping.
I hear you.
So many questions. Thank you all so much for sending all the questions in. Mike, you had a couple more things you want to talk about.
Well, I was going to follow up on a discussion we had last week about I call it the netting, the webbing. It was in pecan trees. If I'm not mistaken, if my memory's right. Carrie Stevenson. Mm-hmm. Who's with our extension service.
In
Escambia County, has done a very good job of writing a little one-pager on those. She was talking about how it's a caterpillar that does that. It forms that. And then when it will eat the leaves on the tree.
Mm.
But she says that's not a big deal because that was the question we had last time. She says it's not a big deal because usually it's deciduous trees that lose their leaves anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if these caterpillars are going to eat the leaves, it's no big deal because they're going to come off this time of year anyway. And then the little caterpillars, they fall kind of at the base of the tree or in the bark of the tree, and then they turn into moths next spring. And then they lay their eggs. Here come the caterpillars again, and that's kind of the cycle. But so I guess the point of the whole thing is don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Really, don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, my solution was, and it's still a viable solution, is, you know, depending on how high they are, you know, you can't get up and do anything about them. But if they're within reach, say with a broom or a rake or somewhere, you can reach up and just kind of tear that webbing apart.
Oh, okay.
That might save some of the leaves that these varmints are going to eat. But not necessary. It doesn't do the tree any harm.
All right. Well, there's your music.
I like it. I like what you started off with, too, with some of the...
May he rest in peace. He gave the world a lot. He was a short time on life.
A good man.
All right. Thank you so much. You're a good man, Mike Wiggins. I appreciate the Garden
Line.
You're
the best, Meg. Thank you.
We'll be back again next Tuesday. You can hear this broadcast again on Saturday. And this is News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.